I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us for Midday. My guest today is Heidi Daniel, the brand new president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. The Pratt is one of the oldest library systems in the United States, and just as Baltimore is a very different place than it was when the Pratt opened in 1886, libraries are very different places than they used to be. Borrowing books is just one of many services the Pratt offers. Heidi Daniel comes to Charm City after working at library systems in Oklahoma, Texas, and Ohio. She succeeds a popular and nationally recognized leader, Carla Hayden, who left the Pratt last year to become the Librarian of Congress. Ms. Daniel joins me to discuss her vision for the Pratt and maybe make a few book recommendations for late summer reading. So, shh, the head librarian is here right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're with us for Midday. Thanks for tuning in. There's a new top librarian in Baltimore. Heidi Daniel took over as president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library this week, succeeding Carla Hayden, who left last year to lead the Library of Congress. Ms. Daniel comes to Baltimore from Youngstown, Ohio, where she oversaw 15 branch libraries. Prior to her stint in Youngstown, she worked at both the Houston Public Library and the Metropolitan Library System of Oklahoma City. Today, a conversation about the future of the Pratt. These days, a library is much more than a place you go to just to check out a book, and that's especially true of the libraries here in Baltimore, which often serve as a resource and safe haven for children and families. The Enoch Pratt offers legal advice from on-site lawyers, after-school programs, and job placement assistance, among other services. The Pratt's central library is undergoing a major renovation scheduled to cost about $115 million. Heidi Daniel will oversee that. She'll manage about 500 employees at 22 branches, a collection of more than a million books, and a budget of $40 million. Heidi Daniel, welcome to Midday and welcome to Baltimore.
Thanks for having me here. We're excited to be in Baltimore.
Well, there are a lot of people excited about having you take over at the helm of the Pratt. So where did you grow up? I mean, you just came from Ohio, but did you grow up in that area?
No, well, I grew up in Michigan, actually, and I grew up in a really small town. My dad was a factory worker, and so we lived there. And then I went to school in Chicago and then kind of started moving around the country. So, you know, as you mentioned in my resume, I've lived in a variety of places. My husband's a native Texan, so I married a Houstonian who had spent his whole entire life for the most part there. And then he moved to Ohio with me, and we lived in the Youngstown area, which is about an hour outside of Pittsburgh, an hour outside of Cleveland, and a, you know, sort of shrinking legacy city, a, you know, steel city. So it was there that I was the executive director. And then now we are here in Baltimore. At least we've been here for about 4 days now.
Yeah, right.
5 days.
Yeah, you're fresh off the boat,
right,
as we used
exactly.
to say. Yeah, that's great. When did you get interested in being a librarian?
Well, you know, I actually got interested in being a librarian because I've always loved libraries, first of all. When I was a child, my parents, neither of my parents had a college education. And, you know, my dad pretty typically dropped out of school to go work in a factory, an auto factory. My mom finished high school. And they had wanted me to have an education. That was really important to them. So they decided to take me to the library from basically the moment I was born. My mom, you know, I had a collection of little golden books. So my earliest childhood memories are really going to the library and it being such a positive experience because even though my family didn't have a lot of money, the library was one of those places where you could get anything and it was never a no. You know, I could pick up 15 books and take them home with me and it was never, we can't afford that or no, you can't have that. You know, it was just whatever. Whatever I saw that was interesting, I could have it. And so I've always had
libraries
these
are all about yes.
Exactly.
Aren't they?
Yeah,
they
are.
You can have this. Sure, you
absolutely.
Can have this.
They're all about getting to yes, right? Or finding a way to get to yes. So that's what it was about for me. It was really positive. And I spent, you know, most of my early life reading and learning about the world through books. So I've always been interested in libraries. And then my first job in libraries was really in outreach services before I had my degree. And I wasn't sure if libraries and I were going to be a great fit because I'm kind of loud, actually, and very chatty and,
Very not librarian, yeah.
I'm not really a stereotypical librarian in that sense or what people think of as a stereotypical librarian, although I find most librarians aren't. But I wasn't sure if it was going to be a really good fit, but I was working in outreach services doing community programming and children's programming, and I started to see how libraries play a role in the community that is very different than just a place to come in and get books. It was at a time when libraries were just starting to evolve and introduce computers, and I was just overwhelmed by the possibilities that existed there for community service and tying together my love of, you know, reading and access and what technology was going to do for us and how we could serve as communities. And that's when I was sort of hooked and got my degree.
Because if I understand it correctly, your undergraduate degree is in women's studies.
Yes,
right?
That's correct.
So, and so you shifted, you made a pivot there. By the way, how did your mom and dad react to your going to college and writing home and saying, by the way, mom and dad, I'm at college, which is what you wanted me to do, and I'm going to be a women's studies major.
Right.
How'd that go over? I mean, I was a music major,
right.
Believe me, I think we probably have similar stories.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, my parents, I think, were just thrilled that I was going to college. They didn't really they never enforced, like, you must major in this or you have to be a business major. You know, I think they hoped that I would do something that would be lucrative. Women's studies, you know, part of it was by the time I was finishing my degree, I think my parents were happy I was finishing my degree and I had the most credits accumulated in women's studies. And it was obviously something I, you know, enjoyed studying and they were fine with it, really. Mm-hmm. Would they have rather I become an attorney or an engineer? Sure. But when I went into libraries, it seemed like a natural fit for me. And I think it made a lot of sense. And
What was the animating force behind that pivot from women's studies to library science? You got a master's degree in library science. When did you decide to do that?
When I was already working in libraries. I mean, part of it is, you know, when you're a liberal arts major, you sort of take different jobs.
You can do anything and nothing.
Right, exactly. You can do everything and nothing. I always tell people I feel like I got a great cocktail party, you know, conversation type of degree. And it's because you know a little bit about everything, right? So then you graduate and you're kind of trying to find your focus. And I'm a big supporter of liberal arts, so I think it's great. So I ended up working in libraries just sort of coincidentally. And it just, as I said, I wasn't sure if it was going to be a good fit, but it turned out to be a great fit. And unfortunately, my father passed away like shortly after I started working in libraries. But my mother, you know, loves what I do and is so proud of me. And
yeah, good for her. She's still in Michigan.
Yeah, she's still in Michigan.
Yeah. When you did your community outreach work, the outreach services, was that in Oklahoma City or in Houston?
Yeah, that was in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm.
So a town like Oklahoma City, I mean, what do you think you will bring from that experience being in, because Oklahoma City, Houston, Youngstown, Baltimore, there's a lot of things that I think are analogous, a lot of things that are similar, but of course, a lot of things that aren't. I mean, Oklahoma City, and geographically, I mean, it's a very different universe being in the Midwest or, you know, closer to the West Coast than the East Coast.
Yeah.
Are there parallels? Are there things that you're going to bring from that experience to this, you know, this pretty gritty East Coast city here in Baltimore?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things that I'm going to bring from each of those experiences is they were all urban libraries. So they were all, you know, Youngstown served an urban area and a suburban area and a rural area. So you had a lot there. And same with Oklahoma City at the time I was there. You know, certainly Oklahoma City is an urban area and the system also serviced sort of a surrounding area. So there was a lot of diversity in the community. And so I think and then in Houston, each neighborhood is a little different. And so the services for each neighborhood are a little different. So some of the similarities are in every library I've worked in, you have to look at each branch in conjunction with the community it's serving around it, as well as part of a system, right? So you've got a system that's servicing an area, but then each branch is servicing a little bit different community. And I think that that's true in cities. It definitely seems to be true here in Baltimore. It seems like Baltimore is very neighborhood focused. And so I think that that's been part of every system I've worked in. Each branch is serving a neighborhood. But you're looking at it as part of a large system as well. So that's been true for all of them. And honestly, Youngstown in particular, you know, it's a city of grit, too. It's seen its fair share of trouble. It's worked hard to overcome that. It's got people who truly believe in its future, working towards that future every day. And I think that's very similar to here. And so I think the biggest parallel from Youngstown to Baltimore is you're serving diverse communities, but they're also communities where, you know, you're working together to overcome some challenges. And there's a lot of people who believe in the future of the city. And I've seen that so far in Baltimore as well. So I'm looking forward to the role the Pratt plays in that.
Heidi Daniels, the new president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Library. You're listening to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you want to join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So, Heidi, your first day at work was like Monday, right?
Yeah, it was Monday.
Yeah. And you moved into your new place. You're renting a new place, and you moved in there like yesterday. Okay,
yeah.
So this is all very new.
Yeah,
so,
I hadn't even seen it until I got home from work yesterday.
Yeah. So. So, you know, Monday, you fill out the forms, you come up with a password for your computer. In any job that anybody takes, you know, you go through the search process, you get interviews, you talk to people, you have a conversation about your notion of what the job will be, and they hire you, and everybody's very excited, and then it takes a little while for you to extricate yourself from the other job and come here, and so here we are. So here we are in August, and you went through this process last spring.
Right, in April.
All right, so you sit down at your desk, you figure out where the stapler is, the tape, the paper clips.
Yeah.
Was there anything that hit you as, oh my gosh, I didn't expect this? Oh my gosh. I mean, and you're like, 72 hours in. So, you know.
Right. Honestly, what I didn't expect is for how many people were going to take the time to welcome me, you know, everywhere that I've been. I was just surprised, pleasantly, and overwhelmed by that. You know, it is the first week. People are asking you, how do you like things? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out.
You don't know it enough to like
exactly.
it.
Right, exactly. I don't know how I like things. I don't, you know, I'm just trying to figure out where my office is, what chair is mine, you know, how the fax machine works, all of that. So, but I think overwhelmingly, it's been just how incredibly welcoming people are. Yesterday, I was over at the Central Library, and I think I was a little surprised at how easily I'm going to get lost there. It's very possible they'll find me someday.
It's just a big joint.
Stuck, in the stack somewhere trying to find my way out. I think I was also overwhelmed by its beauty again. I think, you know, I'd been to the building, but just walking around, saying hi to staff, looking at the ceilings, the character, it's such an overwhelmingly beautiful building. And looking at our special collections, I knew we had some very incredible special collections, but going in the back and, you know, there was a volunteer looking at a picture and we weren't sure, you know, who it was, you know, we knew about what time frame it might be, but just the amount of history stored there, how old some of our books are, was very surprising and really cool.
And it's an interesting time because the building, the Central Library, is undergoing this huge renovation. Where is your office, by the way? Is it? Can you be housed in that building now while they're renovating?
No, we're in some temporary offices on Charles Street now. We're not in there. I think it's about a year before we move back over.
A year.
So
you'll be looking at it from the outside for the first
12
months.
I have a feeling I'll make a few trips over there.
I would imagine.
On a regular basis.
Well, we'll talk about that and the future of the institution, not just that building, but all of the branches here in Baltimore. My guest today is Heidi Daniels. She has just begun her new tenure as the president and CEO of the Pratt Library. You are welcome to join us when we come back. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayTomHall. We'll be back in 90 seconds. Stick around.
You're listening to Midday here on your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the Worldwide Broadcast, it's Midday at the Movies. Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival joins me along with Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post for a conversation about summer cinema. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review Sister Act at Cockpit in Court. If you're just joining us today, we're spending the hour with Baltimore's brand new top librarian, Heidi Daniel. She's the new president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. We'd love to hear from you. You are welcome to join our conversation if you have a question or a comment for our new librarian, 410-662-8780, our email midday at wypr.org, and our Twitter handle at midday Tom Hall. Let's go to the phones now. Spice in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Heidi Daniel.
Hello, Heidi. Hello, Tom. It's great to talk to you, Heidi. I just finished a program this morning at the Hamden Library, singing for the infants and toddlers. And I just want to say that you have some of the greatest children's librarians that I've ever worked with. I'm an arts integration educator, and they are just so well-rounded. And I just love the system, and I think it's critical for Baltimore City because so many people don't have access to so much, and they get a lot of access through the libraries, especially homeless and poor people. And this morning, there were probably families that spoke 10 different languages.
Mm. All right. Well, thanks for the call, Spice. I appreciate it. You know, Heidi, the emphasis on children in libraries is a natural fit. Yeah. And you actually started your career doing children's stuff first, before you got into the admin part of it.
I did, yeah. And so I do want to thank the caller for sharing that with me. I always love to hear how amazing our staff is, because I think that the staff in a system is your biggest strength and a critical piece of success. So I'm glad to hear that. But yeah, I started in children's services. I'm a big believer in the importance of strong children's services in a public library system. I think that there are a lot of children in our community, you know, just like my own experience of having the library be this welcoming space in my childhood. I hope that the children of Baltimore and really any city I've worked in have that same feeling when they walk into a building. You know, there's a lot of challenges education-wise. You know, we're looking at third grade reading scores. We're looking at, you know, summer slide in the summer, trying to make sure kids are able to keep their skill sets up before school starts in that gap. And our children's librarians, our youth services staff play a critical role in that. And it's a free service for you know, Baltimore is children, and I do think it's a critical component. I also think you learn a lot when you're a children's librarian. I always said if I could learn how to manage a crowd of small children, you know, you could use that same skill set and apply it to, you know, crowds of adults. So it's,
Congress, for
sure,
example.
Sure, yeah, right. Exactly. So, yeah, it's where I started, and my heart is still always leans towards youth services.
The integration of what you do at the Pratt and the school system, very important. I don't know if you've had a chance to meet Dr. Sonia Santalisis yet. But, you know, they had layoffs that at one point were expected to number about 1,000 people. It turns out it was closer to 100. But many of those people were librarians, actually, right, as it turns out, a large number of the ones who were not reassigned for this coming school year. How best can the Pratt coordinate with the school system to either fill in the blanks that they're not able to do, or to, you know, amplify what they're already doing?
Well, we have a number of already existing partnership programs with the schools that I think work well, and I am interested in furthering those. I did have an opportunity to meet with the CEO of the city schools, and we had a great meeting, and it was very positive. Right now, we, you know, do provide a first card, which is a card when children start school. They can be automatically signed up for a Pratt card. We'll deliver the cards there so that those students automatically get their cards. I think that works really well. I hope that's something we're going to continue this year. We do school visits, so we'll provide transportation for classes that want to come over to do tours or a visit to the library. I think being aware of what's happening and what the focus is of the city schools helps us tailor our services so that we're matching that same focus and supplementing it and building on what the parents and children will need. You know, I'm a parent of two young children, and I find parenting is a challenge for everyone, right? And managing schoolwork and activities and just all of that for us is complicated, and we're pretty well equipped to be, you know, parents. So I think as much support as we can give to children and families in our community, the better. We have great reading, early reading programs where families can come in. We feed them. We let them explore a book together. We have our Mother Goose on the Loose programs geared towards very young children. So I think we begin 0 to 5 and really get them kindergarten ready. And then when they get to school, we start programs like First Card and build on that with school visits. And I look forward to working with the schools.
Yeah, keep them coming back. And the caller mentioned, you know, her high regard for the staff, and certainly the staff that I've worked with both here at the radio station and in other capacities at the Pratt have been, you know, first rate. In this first, you know, couple of months, 6 months, they're checking you out, you're checking them out. I mean, what can they expect? What are the folks who are working for you now? You have about 500 people on the staff throughout the system. It's a big system. It's a big budget. You got a lot of challenges.
Absolutely.
What's your message to them? What can they expect from you?
Well, they can expect to see me. I'm hoping to come out and visit all of the branches. That's one of my top priorities, is to get to all of our branches to get an opportunity to meet with the staff. I want to see our buildings. I want to see the communities, the buildings sit in. I want to meet with the staff that serve those communities as well as community members. So I'm hoping to get a chance to at least introduce myself and say hi to the staff. I'm very open and I think pretty accessible. I've always had an open door policy, and I think, you know, I'd like to continue that. So I think the staff can expect me to be learning right now. I'm trying to learn as much as I can about the system. You know, people have said, oh, well, what big changes are you going to make? You know, 3 days on the job, I'm not making any changes. I'm just trying to figure out what we're currently doing, who the staff currently is, you know, what they see as challenges, what we can work on together. So they can expect, you know, hopefully back and forth communication with me as much as possible. And, a chance for me to meet them in person, which, you know, with 21 branches and the number of staff we have, that's going to take me a little time. So,
well, I've been hosting this show for just under a year, and the biggest change we've gone through is that our director and engineer, Luke, has gotten a haircut.
Wow.
That's about it. That's
your haircut.
I can't really point to any other grand new, you know, initiatives here on this side. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest today for the hour is Heidi Daniel. She's the new president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. If you'd like to join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. You had an impression of Baltimore living in Ohio and maybe some of the other places you lived in as well. You had an impression of the Pratt before you came. What were those impressions, and how have they lined up with what you've seen now that you've visited a few times?
Yeah. So I didn't really know a lot about Baltimore. I thought about it as sort of a, you know, a smaller East Coast city, I guess, was sort of my impression. And I didn't know much beyond that. I think, you know, I knew there was a harbor and I knew there were row homes, and that was, you know, basically, for most of my life, probably what I knew about Baltimore is, you know, how it ties into American history. And then the Pratt, though, I've always had a really strong impression of, in terms of it's always been for me sort of the gold standard of public libraries. I can't remember a time in my career when I wasn't looking at the Pratt. What is the Pratt doing? You know, a lot of that had to do with Dr. Hayden's leadership. I would always look through the compass. When the compass came out this month and it had my picture on it, I was like, oh, look at this is so.
And that's the publication of the Pratt
Library.
Right,
the Pratt puts out the compass. It's their publication to let everyone know what's going on and all of our programs. So every library system I've worked in has gotten the compass sent to them, because every library is interested in what the Pratt's doing. So it was really cool to get that and be the CEO this time. It's a gold standard. It absolutely has always been innovative. Certainly, you know, I've been asked multiple times how I felt about the library staying open after the Freddie Gray riots. And for me, that is just another reason that the Pratt is a gold standard. I think that that was a great response, and that it shows what the library means to the community, that it was a safe place where families could go. The Penn Avenue branch is a beautiful branch. I love the mural on the outside of the little girl Penny. And I, you know, I've been asked about it. I think it's the perfect response and was all the more reason why I think the Pratt is a gold standard. And Baltimore, I have to say, it's exceeded any expectations I had. You know, it's a really cool city.
You know, I agree with you that I think that the fact that Dr. Hayden and the staff at the Pratt decided to open up the branch that's at the corner of Pennsylvania and North Avenue, right across the street from the CVS pharmacy that had been burned to the ground during the uprising. They opened the next day. I think that was one of the proudest moments in the history of the Pratt and also a proud moment in the history of our city. When we talk about, you know, your vision for the Pratt or your notion of how the Pratt can serve the community, past the rhetoric of that term, you know, serve the community.
Right.
In real terms, what does that mean to you in your heart, what the Pratt can be for our city?
So for me, the Pratt is a convener of people. And for me, that's what public libraries are, and the Pratt especially. I think we are that place where people from every walk of life can come into our building, and we can get them access to whatever it is they need to enrich their lives at that moment in that place. For me, we are a convener of people. We are a place where people gather. We are there to provide resources and materials. That's not always books. You know, there's a variety of ways that the libraries can service people. Beyond
so the
just
physical
the
place really matters.
The physical place really matters to me, but it's not. It's the physical place, and it is the staff that is there as well. And I think it does matter. Yeah, and I think being open is an important thing. We're looking at an expansion of hours later this year, and I'm really looking forward to that because the more hours we can provide for our community to be able to access us, the better.
And I'm sure you're aware of the history of, you know, right after the uprising in 2015, they talked about more money, some coming from the state, some coming from the city,
right,
to allow the Pratt to open longer hours. And then
right,
they cut that money back. And so the hours were extended and then they were put back right to what they had been status pro ante. So that's something that, you know, a lot of people have thought about. But it does seem to you, at least in these very early days of your tenure, that that's something you're going to be able to put into effect.
Yeah, well, we have received money from the state and a match from, or not a complete match, but, you know, funds from the city to be able to expand hours. So we will be doing that this year. We just don't know exactly what that looks like at this point. We're not ready to, you know, do a rollout announcement yet because we need to configure it. But we will be receiving the funds to be able to do that. And they've had listening sessions to listen to the community prior to my arrival to hear what's most important to the communities. And I do think as much as we can sort of expand and stabilize hours across the board for the entire city, but also looking at those areas of highest need, I think the staff has a great idea of, you know, how we can meet those needs and roll out those hours.
Are you sanguine? Are you optimistic about the future of libraries? A lot of folks say, you know, libraries are kind of old hat. I mean, everything's digital. You can get anything you want, but, you know, with a press of a button. I mean, it's kind of like independent bookstores. People, you know, predicted the death knell of those institutions where, in fact, many independent bookstores doing better than they've ever done.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I have friends who collect vinyl that I'm still very optimistic. But I've honestly, you always hear the, like, sort of, you know, the death of libraries and the death of books. And first of all, I have to say that for me, the death of books and the death of libraries are two separate topics, but I don't really see the death of either on the horizon. Libraries are an even more important community service. It doesn't have to do with just how many paper items are in our collection. You know, we've got every day people coming in looking for jobs. We've got people coming in, you know, again, to supplement their children's education. You've got people coming in just to learn, you know, how to do a craft program. We have children after school who need a place to go to learn. None of that's changing, regardless if people read on their Kindle or they read on their computer. You know, I've had people say, oh, well, everybody has a device or a computer. That's not true. There are huge sections of our population that still don't have their own personal device and are reliant on places like the public library to provide that access. And it's even more critical that we are there to provide it. And even if we do have devices, I see people sitting in public libraries all the time on their laptops working or doing other things. You know, we have free Wi-Fi in all of our buildings. So for me, libraries are an even more critical service. Usage continues to change and grow. People maybe aren't using us for exactly the same reasons they were even 10 years ago, but our usage is still there, and we're, I think, even more critical. So I'm really optimistic. I think libraries are doing cool things. I think the technology just gives us more opportunity to innovate.
Are people checking out as many books from the library, I mean, nationally, say in 2017 as they were in 2015 or 2010?
Probably not. You know, I think circulation overall nationally is declining for public libraries just in terms of physical books. But for most public libraries, things like ebook circulation is going up. We, you know, people are checking out our ebooks. And then there's circulation of other things. So in Youngstown, for example, we circled hotspots. So Wi-Fi, people could check out Wi-Fi so that if they needed it, you know, during times where we weren't open or, you know, for whatever reason, for students.
You could actually borrow Wi-Fi from the library. Mm-hmm.
Yep. You could check out a hotspot and take it home, and you'd have Wi-Fi in your home. So, you know, you're circling non-traditional items. And actually, a lot of studies show that the usage for e-readers and e-books are is kind of generational and not the generation you would think. More millennials are using public libraries. Pew Research just released a study that more millennials are using public libraries than any other generation. So that's a great sign that, you know, usage will continue to increase, that we're appealing to, you know, younger generations as well as folks coming in a very traditional manner. So I'm really optimistic. I think even if book circulation continued to decline, our usage would continue to grow. But I do expect circulation to stabilize. And I think if you can emphasize the right parts of your collection that are appealing to the community you're serving, your circ will go up as well.
Because the digital aspect of this, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line, but he was asking about the impact of the digitization of books and resources. Perhaps he was a teacher, but he referenced his students when he says he asked his students for research. They come back with web sources.
You know?
So is there anything inherently more trustworthy or credible about a book as opposed to a website and an online thing?
Well, I mean, that's a complicated question.
Sure.
No, not necessarily, right? We all know that books can be written in ways that are untrue or biased or opinionated, certainly. I think what's different is the ability of students to research and vet their sources. I will take my 9-year-old, for example. You know, last year we were doing a project and he said, oh, well, we can just Google it. And I was like, no, we can't. Like, that's not how we do research in our family. We don't just Google it. And we talked about, well, here are some sources that you can use from the library that are e-sources that were, you know, magazine articles or peer-reviewed, vetted in some way. And he's 9. He doesn't know what peer-reviewed means. But, you know, we talked about, like, hey, someone's looked at this and has said, you know, that this article has credibility. We talked about even if you're using Wikipedia, you know, how to scroll down and look at sources so you can see if someone's written it in there. And you can use that as a launching point, but you need to investigate all of the sources there. I think what libraries do is help people figure out how to vet their sources. Certainly in a time where one of the big topics is credibility of sources, librarians can help you figure out.
That's a hugely important topic for democracy.
I mean, it's a hugely important topic for democracy. Yes,
it is, because, you know, people, there is so much information out there.
Right.
And for libraries to be, you know, repositories, not just of information writ large, but of credible information is an important thing.
Right. And that's something that librarians can do, is help you vet that information. And we do offer, you know, some vetted collections for consumers to get a little bit higher trust level from. So, you know, for me, it doesn't matter what the source is, whether it's a book or a website, you know, the library still has sort of an edge up on being able to provide assistance with figuring out what's credible.
Heidi Daniel is the new president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Library. We'll have more with Heidi Daniel when we return after a quick break. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. If you want to join us on Twitter, that would be swell. @MiddayTomHall is our handle. Stay with us.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday, and I'm joined today by Heidi Daniel. She's the president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. The Pratt is one of the oldest library systems in the United States. The central branch opened in 1886, two full years after I was born. Heidi Daniel comes to Charm City after working at libraries in Texas and in Oklahoma, and most recently she headed the library system in Youngstown and Mahoning County, Ohio. She was there for about 5 years, and she's been on the job at the Pratt for all of, like, 2 days, right?
Yeah.
This is your
third day?
All right, yeah. So on your third day, she's playing hooky from the Pratt to take your calls and comments. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So like you, Heidi, I'm a big fan of libraries. I've always loved libraries. When I was in graduate school in Boston, I loved the BU library. I would go to the Harvard Library, the MIT Library. The Boston Public Library is one of the great buildings in the world.
Absolutely.
In Copley
Beautiful.
Square. You know, the reading room of the New York Public Library. There's just nothing like it. So you have this big renovation.
Right.
You spent $115 million or thereabouts on this building at the Central Library. It's across the street from an historic building, the Basilica, the Baltimore Basilica.
Yes.
What's the footprint is huge. It's like 300-something thousand square feet, I think. What are the innards going to look like? What's going to be different about the innards of that building once this is done in about a year, I guess? Right?
Well, we really have about 2 years probably before the renovation is complete, just probably another year before our offices could move back into the building. Of course, the Central Library is staying open through the entire renovation, so we are constantly moving staff and collections around the building to accommodate the renovation. So the great thing is this renovation is really going to take the building into the future. So I think, you know, the building was completed in the 1930s, and it was, you know, under the direction of the then director, Joseph Wheeler. Little interesting tidbit, Joseph Wheeler, who oversaw the construction of the current Central Library, came to Enoch Pratt from Youngstown, Ohio. So he was the director in Youngstown right before he came to the Pratt. And so now I get to do the renovation of that same building. But when he built it, his ideas were really radical. So you have a street level entrance, which was unheard of at the time. The idea was that you would ascend, you know, most of the big Carnegie buildings had staircases and you would ascend into the building. But he wanted it to be as easy to get into as a department store. And then he created these great windows where you could display items, again, sort of unheard of. And then he put the stacks out where the public could actually get to them. And that was, crazy talk. And I love that because, you know, again, it's for me, it's about access and the ability for the public to get into it. So that's where we're taking this building into the future is sort of what I think of. They've designed it as sort of the next reincarnation of that. So the grand hallway or the entrance will be redone and sort of be, you know, now the Grand Hall, I think is what it's called. It'll be a new Grand Hall that has been restored and will sort of be this great town hall. They're restoring a lot of the original artwork they're finding. So some of it's been painted over and they're blasting away that paint and restoring it to its original beauty. And it's very incredible to see them, you know, tiny little brushes up there restoring this this jewel of a building. And there'll be more teen space than we have now. I think it's like five times more teen space. So teens have a place after school to work, do research, you know, to have a safe place. We'll have a job center. It'll have a creation area. So we're bringing that makerspace idea into that building because we know that technology and creation is a big piece of what libraries do now also. So we'll have this great creation space.
Lots more computers, I assume.
Yes, computers.
Every time
definitely.
I go and need a computer just to, you know, find the call number for a book, you got to wait.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
There's always
absolutely.
A line.
Yeah, because it's a needed resource.
Sure.
There'll be more public space in general, meeting rooms that are accessible to the public, and so it will be taking the current building but modernizing it. You know, all new sort of guts of, you know, HVAC and all of that updated, and all the mechanical systems will be new, and it'll take us, you know, the next 100 years.
We have a caller who's been very patient, Mike in Glen Burnie. Welcome to Midday with Heidi Daniel of the Pratt Library.
Hi, Heidi. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Heidi, I can hear your enthusiasm. how you want to help the Bomer City Library. I think they found the perfect person.
Oh, thank you.
I have a question because, you know, I move around a lot, and it was a chore just packing boxes up with books. So I started borrowing books from the library, and I just think it's wonderful how they have that marina program where if they don't have your book, they can order it somewhere else in the state, you know, maybe from another state. But my question to you is, from an author's point of view, does it hurt the author to have books taken out of the library, or do they get royalties every time you take out a book?
I don't believe the author gets royalties every time they take out a book.
But they get royalties when the library
buys
the book.
Right, they get the royalties when the library buys the book. And we, you know, if it's a popular book, obviously we're going to buy many copies. Generally, authors are very enthusiastic about wanting their books in libraries. And, you know, we do a lot of author visits, a lot of author tours. We have a lot of big name authors coming up in our the Maryland Book Festival is coming up. There's a lot of big name authors there, as well as our Writers Live series, which has a lot of well-known authors locally and nationally. So authors are generally very enthusiastic to come to the library, to have their books in the libraries, to be part of it. I think readers tend to find books in the library and discover authors that way, and then it's generally good for the author and future book sales, and as well as the library. So publishers and library staff tend to work closely together too on author tours. So it's a very positive relationship.
All right, thanks for the call, Mike. You know, it astounds me from my perch here at WYPR. I get books sent to me with requests to interview the authors at an alarming rate. I mean, it's amazing to me how many people are writing books. I mean, they're fiction, nonfiction, it's poetry, it's, you know, it's all up and down. And I get just many, many dozens and dozens of books every month. We do as many of them as we can. But it seems that the book business is thriving. I mean, you mentioned the Baltimore Book Festival. That's coming up the end of September on the 22nd. The Pratt is a partner in that. I mean, do you sense that there is, you know, an excitement and even an upsurge in the notion of reading? Here we are in this digital world where people are texting each other instead of calling each other. You know, actual human contact with fiction and nonfiction and books. I mean, do you think that's an uptick, or is it leveling off, or where are we?
You know, I don't know if I can intelligently answer that, because I think you see studies on both. I think, you know, I've seen studies where fewer adults are reading in America than previously, but I certainly do sense sort of an excitement around books and authors. And there are so many ways people can self-publish now, and, you know, so many ways that they can get their materials out online, as well as, you know, cool things like there's a machine, but like it's an espresso machine is what it's called, but it helps people self-publish that some libraries across the country have. So, I mean, there's all these different ways people can publish their writing. And I think finding authors is easier now than it's ever been, and connecting authors and readers is easier now than ever before. You can tweet questions to your favorite author. I mean, when I was growing up, that was not the case. Authors were, you know, people these far off in the distant.
Sure, not accessible.
Right. Yeah. Not accessible.
There were a lot of things, but they weren't
accessible. That's right. And now I think that accessibility has helped people get more excited again about that. You know, for me, reading is sort of always been how I learn about the world around me through both fiction and nonfiction. And getting to know an author is great because you can connect a person, you know, who's created this world for you, right? If it's fiction, or who's had these great ideas that you want to discuss if it's nonfiction. And so I've always had that excitement. I don't know if I'm not really unbiased about reading. For me, it's
sure.
always exciting.
But what are you reading these days, and what are you reading to your kids?
Yeah. Oh, so those are good questions. So about April or May, I stopped reading anything that I couldn't connect to Baltimore or Maryland in some way. I had a board member who suggested Chesapeake. She had read it before she moved
Michener?
Here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Michener is James Michener's Chesapeake. So I did. I haven't finished it yet. It's, you know, it's daunting.
It's only about 7,000 pages
long. Right, exactly. I was somewhere just post-Revolutionary War, like maybe 50% of the book. So that, I went back. I read a bunch of Laura Lippman books, so all of the Tess Monahan series. I like to learn about a place through fiction. I feel like the characters can show you the city better than if I was reading a street guide or a tour guide. Certainly, you know, you read the tour guides and history of the row homes or whatever, but I, you know, like to see it through characters' eyes. So I went back and did Ann Tyler. I went and checked out Ta-Nehisi Coates' memoir, so I have that. I'm reading Purple Hibiscus, which is the one Maryland.
That'll be the one Maryland one book, and the wonderful author, the Nigerian author, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, will be our guest here on Midday right before the Baltimore Book Festival. We'll talk about that.
Right.
But that's this one Maryland one book. It's the Maryland Humanities thing. They encourage everybody in the state, young and old, to read the same book, Purple Hibiscus, which is Chimamanda's first novel, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's going to be all these events where people talk about it. And so it's like a gigantic statewide book club. Yeah.
So, I checked that out. It's really a beautifully written book. Again, in all of these, you know, you read these books and you get to see a different world than the one you are in, right? And you get to connect to people who are nothing like you or having completely different experiences. But yet I always feel like I can connect to characters in some way. You know, our humanity connects. And so that's the beautiful thing about fiction, is it shows you the world through somebody else's eyes. So I'm reading all of those. And then my kids, we like to read together as a family. And we just started Moo by Sharon Creech. And in it, this family is moving from New York to Vermont. And she writes sort of in a more of a poetic or sort of a verse format. And so we're reading that as a family together because there was a family moving and we were moving. So we sort of decided to read that. My son's reading, he just started the Percy Jackson series.
And he's nine.
Mm-hmm.
So is that third grade?
He's going into fourth grade.
Fourth grade.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he loves the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books. And my daughter is really into, she's seven, she's going into second grade, and she's really into Ivy Bean and the newer, Ivy and Bean, which is a book series, and the newer version of Amelia Bedelia she's been reading. And then also for my son, I did get him the playbook by Kwame Alexander, who will be here as well for mm-hmm. the book festival.
Wonderful writer.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought that going into a new school year and a new setting, those inspirational quotes could and stories could kind of.
And it's funny with kids. I mean, our daughter, I was really nervous about this when she was growing up. She was not a bookish kid. She was not the kind of kid that had a book in front of her face all the time.
Right.
And her mother and I are very bookish.
Right.
And so there were always books in front of our faces, you know, when she was growing up. But it didn't seem to rub off at all. And we were really, I was at least concerned. My wife was much more sane about it. She ended up being a playwright.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, so she does nothing but read and write now.
Right.
You know, so you just sort of can't tell with kids and their habits. So, you know, when they're 7 or 10 years old.
Right, yeah. My son is kind of a reluctant reader, and I try not to panic about it. But, you know, but then every now and then he gets really fixated. So we went through a big president's phase and a founding father's phase because he's been obsessed with Hamilton, the musical. I mean, he knows every single word. It was one of my bribes for moving to Baltimore. I'll be like, we can go to D.C. and see it. You know? So
yeah.
So I have the book, and he's been carrying it around, even though he can't read it at the he gets into little phases where he's really into it, and then there'll be months where he doesn't pick up a book at all. So
yeah, but not to worry, right?
You know,
and the idea is to have the books there,
right.
and
reading aloud
library
as a family, I feel like, is just as important.
Mm-hmm.
So they're having that language exposure.
Tell me real quick, we have like literally 15 seconds. The lawyers in the library, there are actually, that's a resource. People can go and get legal counsel at the library.
Yes, they can, through a partnership we have, and it's a phenomenal program. It's been very popular. We tried it out before I got here, and we've expanded it since because
all
it's
right.
been so popular.
Well, I look forward to having you back, and welcome
Thanks.
To town.
Thank
and
you.
I hope you enjoy your time here in Baltimore.
Thank you.
Heidi Daniel, she's the new president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. Mark your calendars next month, September 22nd through the 24th. It's the Baltimore Book Festival. It's going to feature appearances by lots of local and nationally known authors. Enoch Pratt, of course, is a partner in that festival. We'll have links to more information as well as some of the other programs that the Pratt offers, and there are plenty of them. Come to WIPR.org/ Midday. Coming up on the program tomorrow, it's Midday at the Movies. That's with our movie mavens Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Anne Hornaday, the film critic for the Washington Post. There's a breakout film called Girls Trip. It raked in $65.5 million in its first 10 days, proving the ability of an all-black cast to make folks scurry to the box office. We're going to talk about that and some other summer cinema tomorrow here on Midday. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review Sister Act at Cockpit in Court. Lunch today was provided by the Baltimore Chef Shop on the Avenue in Hamden. They offer a variety of private events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines. This Friday night at 6:30, they're offering a Southern menu class. More on the web at BaltimoreChefShop.com. I'm Tom Hall. Really appreciate your listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
This is your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.